podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Blue Room. It is your prediction show for the new season. Any excuse to get out for a pint with Mark Mosey and Les Roberts. We are in the Glenafric, which if you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see is very nice. How are we doing, lads? How are we feeling about everything before we get into the topics? Mose, it's 2 days away till Everton play a football match. This time, in two days, we'll be back in Goodison Park watching us against Chelsea.
I reckon I was just... Where are we now? Thursday. Come Tuesday, I reckon I was putting some form of sense together about thinking about going the match again and just Everton in general again. And I think the intensifying transfer talk and the Calvert-Lewin nonsense this week has just thrown everything out the window again, to the point of I think I'm basically the morning after Palace again now of what happens over the next 3 months of my life just happens. But yeah, I still stand by the theory that at, what is it, 5:30 on Saturday, as soon as the game kicks off, all of the rhetoric and all of the build-up, mainly off the pitch, will just fly out the window.
Yeah,
and it, you know, I think the nature of the opponent and the nature of the 5:30 kick-off and everything else that goes with it, I think that will very much play into our hands at the moment, because... It's hopefully Chelsea is one of those games where there's no room for Everton to overthink the game at all. I said to Rob on a show earlier today that if Everton were playing Notts Forest at home, I'd be sitting here very nervous about the football season now. But the fact that it's got this kind of free hit connotation about it at the moment plays into Everton's hands.
Yeah, that I think that's what kind of worries me though. That it's Chelsea at home. I know it's like bad to have the promoted team on the first day. We very rarely do well with that.
I quoted the Palace game from '98. I think it was. It was just even as an 11-year-old child, it was haunting.
Yeah, it was. It still haunts me to this day as well. Just this bald head wheeling away from the park. And, the only thing with this is it's like we beat Chelsea every season at home. And it's got to come to an end at some point. And when it does, it's going to be a kick in the nuts. And
like City away.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then we never win against them again.
Yeah.
That sort of setup. So, yeah, I'm a bit apprehensive about it, really, because, as you say, it's like, it is sort of a free hit. But you don't want to get off to a bad start at Goodison as well. Because I don't think it's going to take much for people to start kicking off, is it? All the goodwill's evaporated anyway from the end of last season. I think we said on the pod, didn't we, with Mike, it's not a bad thing because we can't keep harping on about that, because it was no sort of achievement, it was just a dead good night. It would be nice to recapture the atmosphere of Goodison and get it bouncing again, but I am very apprehensive about this one, especially those strikers against some good defenders they've got now and everything.
I weirdly, and this is going to sound mad, but I kind of like the no strikers thing for this game. It sort of like feeds more into this underdog, you know, belief we're going to have. It feels very David Moyes Everton, you know, when we used to play Fellaini and Kale up front in that sort of thing. I obviously don't like that he's going to be out for 6 weeks. Not everyone knows how much I love Dom, but for this game it's sort of like, I don't know, I'm not sure I played Dele Alli there, but that's an entirely different conversation. But yeah, I'm excited, I'm looking forward to it now. Maybe until we go through these predictions, we see how it's all going to go. We're going to do some traditional ones. We're going to do some which are maybe a little bit different as well, about being, you know, broadening out to the Premier League in general. But the first bit's going to be about Everton. The first one is just a traditional one. Les, where are we going to finish this season, mate?
Eighth. Our natural position is eighth.
Is this a real prediction? Or?
Yeah, we're going to start eighth, we're going to finish eighth. I just think the Premier League is a pretty wretched division. There's two runaway teams and the rest pretty much fodder, especially once you get beyond sixth. So I think if the likes of Wolves can finish sort of up and around eighth like they did last season, and West Ham, I know West Ham have got a decent side and Moyes has done a good job, blah blah blah, but they're not that good. And it's just like, I don't know, you know, if things go for us a bit next season, if we get a few signings in over the line, you know, before the transfer window shuts, it can give the team an entirely new complexion. So I'm going to go quite ambitious.
Quite
ambitious, yeah. No, I just say, it's our natural position. It's like, it's where Everton belong. That's what we're going to get.
I don't know if I'm that ambitious. I was going to come here and give you an ambitious 12th. I don't know if we can quite stretch to eighth. The one thing I would definitely echo that Les has said is that it's very easy to get wrapped up in how bad your own football team can be and forget how bad 13 of the other teams in this league can be.
I feel like I can make a case for 13 teams having a bad season.
Yeah.
Like you can look at all of them and go, you can give three reasons why all those other 13, even United to a degree as well. You can look at all them and go, I can give you three real tangible reasons why you're going to have a poor season this year.
There's a grey zone of teams like West Ham, who they've probably accumulated enough quality over the last couple of years. They've got a manager who's been there and done it at pretty much every level of the league. So they're unlikely, exactly.
Just quickly on West Ham, did you see the table that was knocking about from when Lampard took over Everton?
West Ham
were below us.
Yeah.
So they dropped off a cliff at the end of the season, which is kind of classic Moyes to a degree. Oh no, we started bad with us, didn't he? Yeah.
And the mighty Everton are plucking transfer targets off them left, right, and centre. So
massive.
It's an enormous kick in the balls for them, absolutely. But I think top half of the lower half of the table, give me that one, is probably about par for a team who, you know, the next 4 weeks will determine how right what I'm going to say is, but I've got a better squad than last year. They've got a manager who certainly our hope is that he's no longer putting out fires and he's actually able to go about showing us the type of manager that he is. You know, where that takes both him and Everton, it will only be a story that unravels over the next few months. But I personally don't think we're as bad as last season, mainly because that's a massive stretch. I think the momentum that we generated towards the back end of the season has to count for something, and I honestly believe it will. We're probably going to stutter at the start of the season because of the obvious omission of Calvert-Lewin, but as I say, the transfer window, and not to quote Farhad Moshiri on this show because it's by no means something we do very often, but this entire team will be judged by what it looks like at the back end of August, and I do believe that it will be a lot stronger than the team we're going into Saturday with.
Expected losses all over the place.
Well, starting with Saturday.
Nah, Saturday's our banker. It'll be fine. I think I've said 14 before, but I'm going to go, I was thinking 12 when I walked here today. I feel like the transfers in the business in the last week or so, I mean, two of them we haven't even got over the line yet. The rumours have given us hope. But it just feels like things are starting to turn a little bit. It doesn't feel...
Yeah.
You know, if we'd signed Idrissa Gueye this week and then there was no real talk about anybody else or no sign of a striker coming in, I feel like there could have been some potential for it to get a bit toxic on Saturday. But I feel like now there's more of a chance of us keeping perspective going forward.
Yeah.
And I think over the course of the season, I think we'll see young players get better. I think McNeil will get better. I think Gordon will get better. I think Ben Godfrey's going to have a good season again, playing in that back three. I think that's a position that really suits him. So, I mean, there are players in there who are young, who maybe had troughs last year that I think are going to develop. And playing in that system, I know you hate it, Les, but I think that suits quite a lot of our players. And I think it's a hard one to learn, isn't it, as well? You can't just play it for five games or whatever we did at the end of that season.
Mm.
But it feels like now you've been working at it. I think we've got players that suit it. And I think we'll start slowly, but get better throughout the season and be safe by the end of April.
There's one thing I hate about the formation, but to ask you first, what is it about?
It's the two-man midfield I hate. So I don't mind the five at the back.
Yeah.
I don't mind the bombing on full-backs. I was one in the 90s in the Birkenhead Sunday League. I know what it's all about. So I don't mind that aspect of it. I just think you need to play three in the middle, because the two in the middle, the wing-backs don't give you any sort of midfield protection.
Yeah.
That's all, because they're too busy bombing down the line. If a centre-back steps out, they could be out of position. I just think two's not enough cover.
Yeah.
That's the thing I don't like about it.
The thing that's always irked me about it is that it's always been that kind of parachute system for Everton.
Yeah.
In that,
yeah,
we've got Chelsea away at Stamford Bridge on a Wednesday in the Cup, and we've got two midfielders injured. Let's lash five at the back.
Let's put all the defenders on, that'll do.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's bring Davy Weir on. You know, there's always been that kind of emergency connotation to playing five at the back.
Mm.
I absolutely get what you're saying about the two midfield, and I think we said it at the Dynamo Kiev game, in that you cannot go into most Premier League games, but in particular the one on Saturday with Decore and Iwobi playing as your central two. It's just absolutely not going to work. And I think that the problem for Everton is that where are our relative strengths as a squad now? Probably at centre-half. And even with Richarlison going probably out wide up top, you've got McNeil, you've got Gray, you've got Gordon. And you can very quickly see why Lampard was trying to play a 3-4-3 a lot of times last season. The problem with that is that you leave your two lads out wide in limbo. I don't really think we've got a natural wide midfielder in a four. You know, Mikalenko can do a job from coming from deep. Alex Iwobi arguably naturally is more central, or he's higher up the pitch. I don't think we've got two out and out right mid and left mid players who could do that role. So it's always felt like we've just thrown it together. As you said though, Matt, it's something that we've worked on in pre-season. The comfort in our squad is that we've got Tarkovsky and we've got Mina and Godfrey, Keane, Holgate. You know, there is strength there.
Coleman, centre-back last season.
Absolutely, yeah. It's, you know, we can't overlook him. So that's for a squad who are hit with injuries and are already depleted in terms of numbers, we do have to kind of play to our strengths, and I think that is absolutely one of them.
The other thing about it as well, and I think I've said this on another show, is that there's a big distinction between being a fullback and a wingback, isn't there?
Yeah.
If you know the example that I think of when I think of the system and it working in the Premier League is Conte at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And you look at the players who played wingback for them, and you think about Alonso in particular. How many goals did he score a season? 5.
Yeah.
Chipping probably similar, if not more, assists.
Yeah.
You know, the attacking expectation on both of those wing backs goes up by 20-30% all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Because effectively you're playing with, what we're going to be doing by the looks of it, is playing with two sitting midfielders, three centre backs. So that's
so much onus on those two.
So all of a sudden you've got, you know, three players up front who are going to be relying on scoring goals, and you need some support from the others as well. And you know, Mikalenko's shown signs he can do it, Patterson's shown signs he can do it. But they are both still dead young players who are developing, still new to the football club. And it's going to be interesting, I think, to see how they both deal with that side of it as well. But moving on to the second part of it, I asked you both to... I mean, Les has brought notes and flashcards with him. Mark Moseley's not prepared in the slightest.
Flashcards.
He's got a memory, that's why I asked.
Yeah, the next question I wanted to ask you was, a first-team player who's going to surprise us this season, and I put in brackets positively, because I don't want to be sitting here going, well, I actually reckon this player's going to be shite this year. 2 days away from the season starting. But like I mentioned mine earlier, I think Ben Godfrey's going to have a good bounce-back campaign. I think playing in a back three, you need one of the centre-backs to be sort of half a full-back, which I think he kind of is. He can carry the ball forward. I think Tarkovsky's going to help him a lot. He's going to get a bit more protection there. And I think he'll get back to the level he was on the season before. But Mose, what about you? Anyone in particular you're expecting bigger things from this season?
I've got two, but I'm going to stick with the one because I think the other one's more in hope than expectation. I'm also going to go for the controversial one because that's what these podcasts are for. Michael Keane.
You don't have to...
my brother from the peninsula next to me will agree with this because...
He's jumped out of his skin.
When I was thinking about this, I thought nobody is going to say Michael Keane. Absolutely no one. But
the reason, and I'm sure Les will go on to evolve this bizarre answer, is that I think Michael Keane's going to end up playing a large proportion of the season. And none of us want to sit here and say that, but we all know Yerry Mina. He's going to start there. Our best team is going to include him, but when he comes out, Michael Keane is the obvious one for me to go and play that kind of centre-back, CCCB. But he's going to be the holder. Everything you've just said about what you expect from Ben Godfrey, we expect none of that from Michael Keane. And I think the three at the back is probably the best formation for all of our centre-halves. I think the ball players aren't necessarily comfortable enough on the ball to do it in a two, and I don't think we've got that kind of enforcing ball winner. Yeah, Mina is that on paper, but you know, for 10 games a season, it's no good to us. And I think when Michael Keane comes into that system, preferably with Tarkowski and Godfrey either side of him, he'll be allowed to do the basics of what we saw him do at Burnley and what we've seen in his better spells at Everton in terms of just out and out defending. And do you know what? Unfortunately, he always finds a way to unsettle us.
Yeah.
But I think the comfort of having those two people alongside him, it just gives him that bit of a security blanket, doesn't it? Just to say, well, Joe, Tarkowski, he could do my role here in the middle of a three. So if I miss his header or if I don't quite intercept this through ball, I know I've got good coverers in him who can read the game, or Ben Godfrey, who's faster than Usain Bolt.
You should never have another centre-back more than 5 yards away from him when we've knocked out the ball, should he? Like, that's where you want Michael Keane.
If you picture him in your head at his worst, it's some rapid lad knocking the ball past him, and him and Keane being in total isolation with each other. And as you say, in theory, that should never happen.
Go back to that first game of last season where he ran away from Adam Armstrong.
Yes.
I think we know your answer to this one, me. You're in the Keane fan club as well.
Yeah, kind of shock you. Yeah. I'm pretty much the same as what Mo said. So my thought with, you know, we're going to go into this season with the three at the back. He's going to be playing with Tarkowski, who I think will take a hell of a lot of weight off his shoulders, just purely by the fact that Michael Keane is no longer the most senior defender on the pitch, because that's what really seems to rattle him when he's got to be that sort of figure everyone in the defence looks to. So I think take that off his back and he just becomes a more relaxed player. He knows exactly what his job is. You know, if you've got someone who just wants to head the ball away and get rid of it, he's your man. So I think he'll be fine this season. I think he will be a surprise package, so long as he doesn't bring the big boot back.
The only thing I'd say about that is I think
he's shit.
You just made a great case for him. I agree with everything you said, providing that when Mina does inevitably get injured, he doesn't put Tarkowski in the middle and plays Holgate. Because I suppose the downside of that is that it would disrupt two positions instead of one. But I also think Lampard quite likes Holgate as well, and I don't think he'd be averse to him getting in the team, if you get what I mean. So perhaps it would be one of them where it depends on the opposite. Yeah. If you're going to have more of the ball, maybe you'd say Tarkowski go in the middle, Holgate and Godfrey either side of him. You know, they can push on a bit more. The wing backs may push on. You may need a bit more recovery pace, etc., etc. If it's a game like the weekend where you're going to be sat on the edge of your own box and Mina's not playing, I think that's when you go for Michael Keane.
Yeah. I mean, having seen Mason Holgate pass that ball inside against Dino Key, I've had that would be my hesitation in that, you know, to go back to what I said earlier, I don't think our ball playing centre halves are good enough on the ball to be fully categorised as that.
I think Keane's better on the ball probably actually than both Holgate and Godfrey,
which nullifies the impact of bringing someone like Holgate in, because in that situation then if Mina was injured, you'd move Tarkowski into the middle and play Michael Keane as that left centre back, because you're relatively comfortable with him, and all of the kind of assurances and all of the comments that we made earlier about Keane having someone close to him, I guess he's still kind of got that. We don't really know how good James Tarkowski is on the ball because we haven't seen enough of him, frankly. But Holgate still gives me all the fear.
Yeah, he did well at the end of last season, to be fair.
I
can see what you're saying there, because I guess if you're playing a three at the back and your full-backs are pushing on, in Godfrey and Holgate, you've kind of got half a full-back there already and half a centre-back.
And they're a bit better when the ball goes over the red arm.
Yeah, so they do kind of fit in that position nicely. So yeah, I suppose it does depend on where you're going to play Tarkowski.
Next question about young players. Is there anyone you expect to sort of come in and make the position their own this season? I'll go first again on this. In fact, you know what, Les? You had your answer Rob last time by Moe's being...
My answer probably going to be terrible for this because I know absolutely nothing about him. I've just heard his name quite a lot.
So go on, you go first on this one.
Let me prepare my jump up in enthusiasm. Oh my God, he said the name.
Stanley Mills.
Oh, no, see? I wasn't going to go with
that. Was genuinely going to be Moe's.
Oh, God, here we go. We should have met beforehand, shouldn't we, to sort of like compare our answers, I really don't know anything about him other than I've heard good reports that he's doing really well, and Lampard's picked him and Warrington to stay with the club and not put them out on loan. You kind of think there, you know, unless these signings do come off before the end of the window, you kind of think there will be a place in the midfield for players like that, probably the League Cup round two. I'm kind of excited to see what he's got, because you know all the reports are really good, and I think him doing well at Everton would really piss his dad off as well. So it's like,
the important thing.
Well, I think him really is the name that immediately sprung to mind on this one. Do you have any more information that you on him that you know of?
The thing I did my predictions for the Echo this week, and the thing I said about young players and Mills was, I think he'll play 10 games at least this season, and I think the reason why is because he's. We know what our looks like with injuries and suspensions and whatever. And I think one of the big things about him is he's kind of versatile. I think he's played right back, right wing back, right wing in midfield, as you mentioned there. From what I saw in pre-season, in those games, he looked really good. You know, can carry the ball, you know, physical, can mix it a bit. And I think he's just going to be a dead useful player to have around. So as much as I've not seen loads of him yet, he scored a hat-trick the other day as well, didn't he? You know, so he's clearly got a bit of that in his locker as well. But like you said, you just hear good things, and I think when you watch players sometimes, you just think you look like you could probably handle senior football. You know, maybe he's still got a lot of learning to do, but I think his versatility means that he'll probably get a few minutes this season when, you know, Patterson inevitably gets injured, or it won't be until he gets injured and we need an emergency right wing back.
I was enthused by the way he passed the ball in pre-season. And I mean,
he's very positive, doesn't he?
He strikes the ball with purpose, I always think footballers pass the ball in a way in which they expect to receive it, and he really punches it into the player's feet, and I quite like that, because it shows that in the same situation, he'd be quite comfortable accepting that ball first into his feet and hopefully getting on the half turn. And, you know, I appreciate that he's played in a much more attacking role at a younger level. If he gets into the starting 11 this season, it is going to be in that right wing back role when Patterson inevitably gets injured and Coleman just runs out of life after 20 games. But
I see Coleman as a third centre back now, to be honest.
But if Patterson got injured, for example, you'd probably expect Alex Iwobi to fit in at right wing back then.
Unless we have an inevitable crisis in midfield and we need him.
Yeah. Alex Iwobi will be playing the three positions in one game. The only other player, as Les mentioned, is Lewis Warrington. And, you know, you hesitate to big someone up too much because of their kind of footballing previous, because there hasn't been a great deal of that at competitive level. And what we have seen has been down the road to Tranmere. And it's very difficult to gauge how useful that is from a technical point of view. You know, when you send a player on loan to that sort of club and at that sort of level, you're doing it almost for all of the human reasons as opposed to the footballing reasons, aren't you? To develop that kind of physicality or that winning mentality. The one thing that stands him in good stead for me is that the manager has looked at him and said, you're going absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes for, you know, it's always been very difficult to kind of work out the hierarchy of youth at Everton in terms of where all of these players stand up. Even, you know, right to the brink of the first team, where historically it's been people like Anachebe and Vaughan, or it's been Sims and Dobbin. And it's incredibly difficult to find out where the mental priorities of the manager lie. I think if you've got someone, you know, how old is Lewis Warrington? 18? He's looking at him saying, you're not going out on loan this year. You're actually going to come in really useful. And I know that a lot of the permutations of the squad have kind of led to this consequence where we simply can't let midfielders go. But, you know, we're in exactly the same situation up top, and Frank Lampard has let Lewis Dobbin walk out the club for a year.
Sims as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I know that Sims was kind of, it feels as though that was already in progress before the Calvert-Lewin injury. But for him to say to Lewis Warrington, you're going to be quite important here, I think that, you know, it's incredibly difficult to gauge in pre-season, isn't it? Especially in a game we got thumped in against Minnesota and all the other disappointing results that we've had. But when you see him on the ball, he's got that level of calm that is not very stereotypical of an Everton midfielder. And I think that's what probably excites me about him, is that he looks incredibly comfortable with the ball at his feet.
Probably a lot of him.
I know that shouldn't be something that we sit around in a pub talking about as being like an exceptional thing for a footballer. But when he takes a touch and takes another one out of his feet and passes the ball, he actually looks like a functioning human being. And honestly, if you put Abdoulaye Doucouré in that position, it all looks a little bit fumbly and a little bit thrown together. You know, we're not going to advance this lad beyond his years, but I'd feel fairly comfortable at 1 or 2-0 in the game, hopefully we get there at some point with him coming on. And I'm not going to say he's going to dictate the game, but he's going to just add that calming presence on the ball where when he gets it, he doesn't necessarily lash it into a corner for a striker to chase, but he does go sideways and then gets it back and then goes out to the other fullback. And I think he's got that level of maturity in his game that is way beyond his years, and I think hopefully we'll see a lot more of him this season.
Yeah, I was just thinking then about the lads we might be bringing in Onana and Gay, and wondering if that means he might be going on loan.
Possibly, yeah.
But I also think as well that them two coming in also probably means it's more likely we're going to play like a 4-3-3, which may in turn open up more chances for him to get in the team as a third midfielder. So it's sort of like give and take away with those two coming in.
If they both come in, I think, does it force the issue that we have to go to 4-3-3?
I don't think it forces the issue. It gives you the option, doesn't it? No, a three at the core, right, and then those two.
I think if you're going into any Premier League game and they are both part of the squad, I don't think there's any way you don't play them in Decore. Mm.
Decore, yeah.
I know what you mean. You know, he's not in great form, etc. Yeah. But
well, we played in a three quite a lot last year as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think in the same way that most of our defenders are comfortable in a three, most of our midfielders are also comfortable in a three. So, you know, if someone wants to draft some form of mad footy manager chart and show us what you can do with that, then that's great. But it unfortunately is a difficult puzzle to fix, isn't it? But as you say, the reality of Everton is that those six players in terms of midfielders and central defenders are not always going to be there.
5-3-1-1, then you play Dele in a striker.
But then you've got no wing. McNeil's not playing, Gordon's not playing.
Don't matter.
That's the most Mike Bassett I've ever seen you.
You need wingers, yeah.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. And just quickly on Everton to finish off, I imagine you're both going to give the same answer to this. Lampard's stock in May, will it be higher or lower than it is now? If he keeps Everton up, gets us the positions that we, you know, you've both said, it's got to be higher, hasn't it?
I think come May, his stock will be higher, having kept Bournemouth in the league on the last day.
Who'll be our manager then? Sean Dyche?
Who would be our manager at that point? I'm trying to think who else would get Large from Wolves. He'll have come into Everton.
Happy Vitor sign at last.
Yeah. He'll have come into Everton, brought Connor Cody and Neves. I'll be optimistic on loan with him in January. That he'll do a job for us, but Frank Lampard, he'll initially struggle, don't get me wrong, but that home advantage.
Bournemouth for Everton.
With Bournemouth playing every single week at 12:30 on a Saturday morning and it being sunny, which definitely always happens, by the way, I think you'll manage to do it.
Can you get coach welcomes that early, though? Will people be up for it at that time or not? Could be a struggle. You're not going to get down there for 10:30 in the morning, are you, when the bus arrives?
We arguably had more at a coach welcome than they'll manage to fit inside. The vitality, is it?
All the lads in the champagne bar, the vitality, though, you know.
That would go down really
that's
well.
That's the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Scott Parker wears free coats as well, doesn't he? So get him sacked as quickly as possible. But Les, what do you think of that, mate? Obviously, we're going to finish eighth. He's going to be potentially manager of the season.
Pretty much, yeah. I think so. Yeah, it will be. I mean, there's a little bit of pessimism floating around in the replies you put to the tweet you put out today, saying he's going to be sacked by Christmas, out by November.
And I hate it when people say that.
And there's that sort of prevailing feeling that it could really go wrong really quickly, and it could unravel really quickly because it's Everton. But yeah, I think he'll be sound. I think he built up enough of a good feeling around the club last season to, I think, as you said before, like carry that on next season. You know, finish the season strong, take it into next season. Yeah, I think it'll be sound.
He's earned our patience.
Yeah,
you know, we were saying that today. Like, all of the, when you talk about Everton fans and how good they were last season, it's all about the, you know, pressing forward, positivity, win the game. How I would like to see that manifest this season is that when Abdoulaye Doucouré plays a sideward pass and it's a little bit too far ahead of Mikalenko and it goes out of play, it's not toxic for 7 or 8 minutes after. You know, there's that affordability to the players of, you know, as Les said earlier, it's no great achievement, but we could be talking about a very different prediction show right now. We could be 3 weeks into our season by now in terms of how early that Burnley-Huddersfield game was, but that's the type of calm maturity that I hope has kind of diluted a little bit around the Goodison Park fan base. And, you know, I want it to be that type of place over the next two seasons for so many reasons, but it's primarily because I don't want it to be a place of hate when we come to leaving. You know, these two seasons, and I said this to Rob earlier today, that, you know, this season is not all about preparing for next season. But in the back of my mind, there is that little bit of me that thinks, well, if we could do everything possible this year to prepare for a really good season at Goodison Park next year, I'd probably buy into that, because we've seen it, haven't we? We've seen it at White Hart Lane, we've seen it at Upton Park, whereby that last season is meaningful, and that's absolutely what I want Goodison Park to look like next year. And, you know, as I say, we can't sacrifice a season because Everton are simply not good enough to do that. But I'd like to think, from a fan perspective, that's the unconscious mantra that we've taken from last year, is that we're actually here to help them. I'm not one to put Everton or Evertonians on a pedestal, but we would not be a Premier League football team without Everton fans at the moment. So I like to think that, yes, we take pride in that, but we also use it positively going forward into this season.
Yeah, that's the end of the Everton predictions bit. Les, should we do some mailbag questions before we go into the main bit? How many have we got?
We've got three, two of mine as well.
Let's rattle through with them. Go on. It was a late decision, wasn't it, to merge the shows?
I will stand here now and say I have not been prompted, but it does not affect me even when I'm prompted.
Exactly. Where's your flashcards?
I did not do my research earlier. I refuse to do it now.
So, based on the fact that Mason Holgate is terrified that Batman's actually dead, did you see that video?
Yes.
So the question is, who's the best superhero? So this got asked to the Everton players in the week. Mason Holgate walks up to the camera and goes, "Batman, innit? Oh no, he's dead. Hang on." And Everton just said, "Iron Man," I think, in the end. So, yeah,
who's Mason the best Holgate, superhero?
Who's the best superhero?
But, I mean, Batman would absolutely be my answer.
He's not really a superhero though, is he? He's not got any superpowers. He's just dead hard and he's got loads of gadgets. Spider-Man's got like an actual...
You've just unravelled 33 years of that child in
it
me.
It was all a lie.
That thinks, is the Batmobile not a real thing?
But you couldn't be... I mean, some of the things that you couldn't realistically make, but you could... make that
Moses
quite...
the Baker Head Batman.
You could quite closely like make that to be real.
Go on then. I want to see.
Well, did they like make it for like the films and stuff, for like models and whatever? I'm sure some of it was special effects, but what about like
some of it?
I mean, I'm not. This is like totally not my genre, but I imagine there's like festivals people go to who love comic books and stuff, where there's like life size Batmobiles and stuff like that.
I get what you're saying, in that is there any supernatural, is probably the wrong word to use, but is there anything totally non-human about the way that he operates?
It's like Spider-Man's like, weird fella, isn't he? Superman can fly around, they're superheroes.
Batman can glide.
No, he can't. It's his cape.
Have you not played Arkham?
He's spanning his wings.
It's his cape. It's basically got wings on his back.
You can have Batman.
Do you know what? I win. Are you going with are you going with Spider-Man?
Yeah, Spider-Man, yeah.
Is it mainly for the Tobey Maguire films?
I can't even remember seeing them.
Yeah.
You can shoot webs, you can sling around.
Yeah. Sounds like you've gone full skulls and you're just lashing trainers around the pub.
who would you say last?
See, mine probably would be Spider-Man as well, because he was my favourite as a kid.
Actual superhero.
You win.
Spider-Man's the new Michael Keane, yeah.
I did
watch the original X-Men film again last night. Yeah. And it still quite stands up. It's still quite good. So Wolverine's pretty good as well.
See, he's got claws, hasn't he?
His superpowers is his healing factor.
Which big claws are his superpowers?
No, that's not technically a superpower, because that was like put into him.
Oh, okay, right.
So his actual mutant superpower is he's got healing powers. Again, so if you punched him in the face, he got a black eye, it just goes straight away.
I mean, when I graze my elbow, it scabs over, but I'm not a superhero.
How quickly, though, is the thing? We're all superheroes in one way or another.
What if you like chopped an arm off, but it grew back?
Couldn't chop it off because he's got that metal exoskeleton.
You cut through metal.
Not this metal, you can't. Right. It's the hardest substance.
I can imagine him like slowly watching a fella just cut through his arm. Just hold still if you want. Just while I put this fucking bandsaw through your arm.
There you go. So you brought out the comic book nerd in me there. Oh, we're going to the next one. Predict the next global disaster, which is due in 2023, clearly.
Bramley Moor getting flooded.
Oh, there you go. That's it.
Yeah. Serial flooding.
Yeah.
What's the 2023 one, if not?
Well, we've had COVID, didn't we?
It's not some form of like premeditated prediction.
Just, something will happen next year that turns the world. So COVID did last year, everything has this year.
Yeah. I'd say, you know, in terms of things that would hit not only the economy, but just civilization in general massively, someone will develop some form of, you know, no ideas here, but someone will develop some form of like, almost like a technological disaster,
like a mad virus
where, and you know, computers, phones, everything goes, and you know, that would obviously be quite the issue.
It'd be like that South Park episode when, going out to find internet in California way.
But yeah, I think in terms of what would hurt civilization most, it would be something technological, but I would caveat that by saying that Batman will sort it.
I'm sure he cooks, he's got all the gadgets, but doesn't make him a superhero.
Oh no, but if all the power's gone and everything, like, he's fucked, isn't he?
Yeah, but yeah. Not a superhero though. No,
that is true. Spider-Man will be better in that situation.
He doesn't need gadgets.
In the techno bomb era.
Yeah.
What would he do?
He's got like an unlimited supply of webs.
You've got 7 billion angry people on the universe, and you just spunking webs everywhere. What's that gonna
like? But Batman won't be able to drive his like car or anything.
Oh shit! Yeah, you've got me.
Like he'd be
reduced to a Focus.
He definitely has to charge. He definitely has to charge his bat belt when he gets home as well.
Is it a
USB? It's got like 1% left, and he'd be like, "Oh bloody hell!"
Definitely got a contactless charger for that, Annie.
Alfred Philip the Mondeo.
Yeah. Imagine what his bedside's like with all his gadgets in the night, plugged in, just everything charging up on the floor.
You get no sleep.
His electricity bill must cost a fortune.
No wonder we haven't seen him recently with the bills going up.
He's dead. That's why. He's dead.
Shit, yeah, the dream is ruined.
I feel like I'm going to have like people who are really passionate about this like having a go at me on Twitter for not saying that.
I hope you get trolled for Spider-Man plugged in.
I think the global disaster could have something to do with robot dogs with guns on.
Yes.
Because he's thrown guns on them now.
Some of those videos are scary.
Yeah, it was inevitable that we were going to do that.
Yeah.
So, it will involve Liz Truss, nuclear war, and robot dogs.
What a trilogy.
That's what it will involve.
I thought The Dark Knight was great, but, you know, this is going to be something else. Liz Truss with her exoskeleton. Oh, my God.
Should we do the final question?
Go on, then.
So Joe's asked...
Batman?
Yeah. Joe's asked, dream lineup for Everton's all hospitality at Bramley Moor, and he thinks we should bring back the Spurs cheese room idea.
That just seemed like a way of them saying there's going to be food and drink at the new Bramley Moor.
I think so, yeah, and it's going to be all in the ground.
Yeah.
All
of it.
I think I've said before, I've made my plea for cheese boards at the match.
So I'm
going to stick with that,
Belgian ale would be my push for the match. You know, sophisticated members of the gentry sitting on the banks of the Mersey sipping 2 8% triple carmelites instead of...
While gazing over to Birkenhead.
Well, that's it, yeah. What more could you ask for than a bottle of Orval and a view of Seacombe? Really. I think that's the matchday experience that all offers.
Oh, God. Les.
I'd just go with any decent food and drink would be sound by me. But the cheese room's a great idea.
Yeah.
Fully on board with that. And just on the theme, like, I've seen home baked pies are going to be at the game.
Yes.
At the weekend. Yeah. That's a great addition.
Paddy was panicking before, worrying it wasn't going to be in the press box. Because he gets free food every week. Oh, must be a hard life.
It's genuinely, like, it's not that easy to appease us on a match day, is it? You know, between 1 and 5, if you offer an Everton fan a ticket to the match, half decent in-game experience, and then some good scran and a nice beer afterwards, then you are ticking a lot of boxes. Yeah. You know, a lot of thought and a lot of positive thought, I think, is going into the development of not only Bramley Moor but the surrounding area. It's worryingly one of the things about Everton which all seems to be going well and also making a lot of sense. You know, everything that came out of all of the fan consultations, for example, it gave you all the warm feels inside that the people at the top know exactly what this whole location has to look like.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate we're in a pub recording this, but you know, this is not the be all and end all. But I want, if I'm going to go out and spend 30, 40 quid on a match day, which I go to the match with you, Matt, it's probably going to cost me.
Cheap shot there.
No, but
it's verified, Les. I got the first round in today, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm looking out, bought my first one, and glasses are empty.
Let's do a podcast and the bloody set.
Listen to him, yeah.
But you know, realistically, I want that money pumped in some way back into the football club. Yeah, if we're going to go out and spend that money, it should make sense that we keep it in house, because you know we all want to see not only the team and all of those kind of very basic Everton ideas grow, but we want to see the entire club, the entire location, the entire area of the city grow, because you know the development of North Liverpool, that's not just something that Everton said. I think that is a genuine target for the club to probably justify why they've pushed so hard for this stadium. And there's obviously, you know, enormous financial implications for Everton for the project to do well. But everything I know about Everton suggests that they are very keen on developing the socio-economic areas of Bramley Moor, and you know the development of what that particular stadium can do for that particular area of the city. So, you know, in summary, get me a nice pint.
A good way to finish off the mailbag section. We're into the home straight now, lads. We're going to rattle through the general bits. Again, some of these are traditional. The first two are. The last two, not so much. So we don't have to dwell too much on this first one. But who's going to win the league? Les.
City. I've got to go City. I can't go down.
Yeah, Man City, because they are strong. They are the title holders and they have Erling Haaland. And I don't really think you have to go way beyond that.
I'm not going to say mine on that one.
You're the worst.
Who's getting relegated, Moes?
I would go with Bournemouth, Fulham, and to go against everything I said about Frank Lampard. His stock will be lower come May. But no, I think Bournemouth, Fulham, and I think Brentford will go down this year as well. I think that, you know, the whole multi-season syndrome, whether it be second or third, I think this very often catches up with promoted teams, doesn't it? But not to put it all on one man, I think Christian Eriksen was a big part of that team.
It feels like more not having Christian Eriksen syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say name me 4 Brentford players, because I'm not going to ask impossible questions of people, but I don't think there's been sufficient strengthening of that team to suggest that they are capable of not struggling. I don't see a way in which they go into the last 2 games of the season with their future hanging in the balance. I just, mainly because of him, I don't think they've got enough firepower, even though he's not renowned for his goal scoring, but his contribution to them going forward was massive, and without that I'd see them struggling.
Mine's probably wishful thinking more than anything.
I've gone places you don't want to go.
Liverpool, Man United, no, and Newcastle. No, I've gone Leeds, Southampton, Leicester.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
I'd be all for that.
I would like that. Yeah, I think Leeds will struggle again because It's just, yeah, you know, they sold Calvin Phillips.
Sold the best two players, haven't they?
Exactly, yeah. You know, and the manager doesn't look great.
Yeah.
He could become a bit of a comedy figure.
So have you got Leeds, Leicester and Southampton?
Southampton, yeah.
Leicester.
Yeah. I know. I'm just looking at Leicester and think the arse falls out of them at the end of every season. They could go into this one, like, quite weakened.
Yeah.
From last year, particularly if Maddison goes as well.
Fofana, literally on the way he is, like Chelsea put a bit in for him.
Yeah, so you kind of look at them and you think they could go in significantly weaker.
Yeah.
Brendan could spew it after 3 months or something, and it could all unravel quite quickly, which would be fun.
Just to expand on an earlier point that we made, we've mentioned 6 teams there, and we haven't mentioned Crystal Palace, Brighton, and Notts Forest.
Yeah.
I think those first two would be absolutely fine.
That's fine, but most people would have probably said Southampton will be fine this year, and you know it did get to 2 games out before they were in trouble. The point being is that the entire bottom half of this league could go down. And, you know, we haven't spoken about Everton, who I guarantee the creators of the very popular Brentford podcast will be sitting around saying Everton could go down this year. Yeah. So we probably make up the 10th team in that algorithm of it's literally anyone's game.
What about Newcastle? Villa?
Villa, I'd put in that bracket. Newcastle, you know,
I haven't signed anyone, I've
despised them, but did they do a lot of their work in January? You know, I would absolutely love to see them involved in that.
That is true.
You know, that is true, yeah. You could go full Frank Lampard on them. We could do a swap, you never know. But I would put, you know, the teams that I mentioned, Brighton, Palace, Newcastle, they've probably all got enough, you know, asked to drag 4 points out of the last 4 games, they'd probably all be able to do it. Whereas you look at someone like a Brentford, for example, I don't necessarily think they've got that fighting nature about them. There's a few teams in this league where asked to switch on the chaos engine, they'll do it, because we've seen Everton do it. I just don't think that Brentford have ever got that capability to shift into fourth gear and say, shit, we're in trouble, let's actually push on and let's go and get 6 points from the next 3 games. Like, remember Wigan always used to do it, they used to go to the Emirates and Old Trafford and get 6 points. I don't think they've got that next step in, whereas teams like Brighton and Everton and Palace, they've all got that extra gear, hopefully, which means it keeps them safe.
I'm going to go, I'm on the Marcus Silva hype train again. I think Fulham will be alright. I think they looked like a really good side last year, so I think they'll be okay. Forest have just done too much for me. I feel like they've lost a lot of what they're about. I think paying Lingard $200,000 a week is going to be one of those decisions when he starts getting linked with other clubs in January because he only signed a 1-year deal. Yeah. We're all going to go, what on earth was that about? It was a bit ridiculous.
Jaylings.
I think Leeds will go. I think selling your captain and, you know, the heartbeat of your team and Phillips is massive. Rafinha, you know, creative player. Bamford looks increasingly like he's got Dominic Calvert-Lewin made of biscuits syndrome.
Yeah.
So I think that I don't think Frank's going to keep Bournemouth up either on the final day. I think they're going to. They haven't done any business, have they? And
so you've got Bournemouth, Leeds,
and Forest.
Yeah.
And they're my 3.
Okay, I'm trying to think of the teams that you think will survive. So Fulham, Brentford, you think those
Everton,
two?
Southampton.
There's a lot of fodder there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fodder. Like, you know, if any one of those teams could get back to the basic point of just beating bad teams at home.
What about Wolves?
I mean, you're preempting one of my answers.
Let's not go down there then. So the next one, if you've not read the questions properly, you might need some time to prepare for this. So,
I've read them.
So I'll throw it to Les first. So this is a bit of a different one. So we asked you both to name 2 players who scored less than 10 in the league last season. Who are going to get more than 10 in this season. So Les, I'll throw to you first on this one, mate.
Go with Gabriel Jesus and Calvert-Lewin.
Okay.
I think Jesus will do all right at Arsenal.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he'll be the number one striker there. I think he'll do pretty well. And Calvert-Lewin, as long as he can stay fit, should just eke out 10 to keep the toppies safe. I think so. Yeah, I think they're my 2.
I had 3 and they were 2 of them. I'll go 2 different then. So one of mine, you know, he didn't hit 10 last year because of the nature of his transfer, but I think Luis Diaz got 5. I don't really see a way where he comes into that setup without Sadio Mane and doesn't get into double figures. So I think he, unfortunately, is one of them. The other one who really impressed me after coming into the league was Kulusevski. You know,
a bit of a loophole here. You're picking two lads who joined in January who were dead good.
I didn't read the terms and conditions of the question. Apologies.
But
Kulusevski is probably the one that I would say, you know, much to one of our own's, Richarlison's, detriments. I think him, Son and Kane is probably their most productive front three. You know, and he's shown a real eagerness to get into the box and score goals. But, you know, to echo what Les said about Jesus, everything I've seen of not only him, but, you know, don't get me wrong, I've not watched all on offense yet, so I don't know how Yadar his tactics are here, but it does seem as though Arsenal are fairly set in, you know, that much used word in football of identity. It feels as though they really know what they want to be and they really know what they're about this year. Anyone can go and smack a Premier League team 4-0 in pre-season, you know, that doesn't make you big or clever. But the fact that they did that to Chelsea during pre-season, and Jesus was very much from the get-go involved. You know, he was thrown in against us, he was thrown in against Chelsea, there was always that feeling that he was going to be central to everything positive that Arsenal do. I don't think there's a way in which he doesn't hit 17, 18, never mind 10.
I'm going to go Martinelli. I think he's going to have a really good season, sort of coming back from injury last year, but when he was, you know, there were glimpses from him where you thought, wow, this lad is really good player. And I think playing off that left hand side with Jesus, focal point, is going to do really well. The other one, Sancho, I think after the year in the league, playing under the manager, it's going to suit his style a bit more. There's some small signs towards the end of last season, he was starting to get it together a little bit. So I expect him to be a little bit better. I also think Gordon might just get there as well.
I think it'll be interesting. That, you know, the first thing I thought about when you said Sancho was that kind of dangling carrot of the World Cup. And, you know, as much as it shouldn't be like this, you'll probably get a little bit of extra incentive from players who know that their position in the national side is kind of up for grabs. You know, it's a flip of a coin, really, isn't it, in terms of who starts the season better in terms of Sancho or Sterling at a new club, for example. You know, if one of those was to really kick on and get 10 before Christmas, you realistically go into the first game of the World Cup saying, you're my man out wide on the left. I think that could be really important as being an incentive for certain players. But I should say, Sancho, disappointed in his first season, and you probably say from a goals and a stats return point of view, it can't really get any worse for him.
Dwight McNeil as well, obviously. After his 2 in pre-season.
How many did Neil Morpay get last year? He's probably around that. You know,
I think he got more than 10. He took penalties, didn't he? So.
Yeah, true, yeah.
And the last one, I asked you for your big, baseless take for the season. We'll read some others that people have sent out about this. We asked people for their Everton ones, but it doesn't have to be an Everton one. I've got one Everton one and one non-Everton one, but feel free. Mark, you were very keen to lock Wolves earlier. Is it in relation to this?
I've got two, and they're both non-Everton. I think Wolves will really, really struggle. You know, I said before about Brentford going into the 37th game still looking to secure their safety. I honestly think Wolves will be in the same situation. To appoint an untested manager, you know, the better players in their squad have worryingly been there for a little bit, you know, not too long, but
well, until we signed Connor Cody.
Very true, but you look at people like Jimenez and Neves and the more creative of their players, not only are they advancing in age, but I think when you get into a 3 or 4 year stint at the club, there is space for the motivation to deplete quite rapidly. Have they added considerably in the summer? They signed a centre half from Burnley.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll say this very much from an Everton point of view, in that that does not inspire hope in me.
Jimenez is injured again for 8 weeks. Yeah,
I don't. Yeah, he is. Yeah, I don't quite think they've done enough to convince me that they are in the same bracket of a West Ham, for example, in terms of safe mid-table stature, I think they probably do creep more into the Southamptons and the Brightons of the world, in which, you know, you bottom half of the league, but you're in danger of dropping here. I honestly don't think that they've kicked on, and they probably peaked after 12 months in the Premier League. They had that really good finish, that flirting spell in Europe, but it never really quite went anywhere. And it feels as though they've been on a, I don't know about, yeah, it's a gradual decline. I don't think any of us have really noticed it, but
I think last season they were six with about 10 games to go, and the arse just fell out of them completely.
Yeah, and you know, we've spoken about teams who kind of fail to shake off that momentum in pre-season. They honestly do strike me as one that aren't capable of reversing that quickly, unless they do some really clever business in the last few weeks of the transfer window. My other one is that I don't think Liverpool will finish in the top three.
From here for that one.
Wow.
Who's your top three then?
I think two of Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs finish above Liverpool this year.
I think Chelsea are going to finish fifth or sixth this year.
My reasoning from a Liverpool point of view is kind of linked, not only from my own personal optimism, but it's kind of linked to the Wolves argument, in that spells of football teams or clubs or managers or players, when we talk about Wolves, they only last so long. You know, there are some fantastic footballers there. There's a world-class manager, as much as we despise him, and as a club in a whole, they are set up for greatness, and we've seen it unfortunately in recent years. But whether it's Mane going, or the uncertainty that we saw earlier in the summer over Salah, the kind of big shrug of the shoulders that we have to do about Nunes, and to a degree Diaz, although he looks like a great player, I think that there's a number of question marks developing in that squad. Where, do you know what, many of their fans and many other football fans will say that they are still high quality. They very much still could be, and they very much could still challenge. But I would expand the point by saying that I think Arsenal and Spurs and Chelsea have got deep enough squads to really press them. Liverpool have done a lot in recent years, but other than Van Dijk, which we heard way too much about, there hasn't been any sort of monumental injury spells, you know, in terms of their attacking players.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Going into most games last season, you could guarantee it was Firmino, Salah, Mane, or Diaz, Mane, Jota. Salah, Jota came in, you know. There was strength up there. And, you know, I omitted Jota at the start. There are still strength in numbers there, but I don't think any team is capable of sustaining two major injuries in an attacking setup and not having the same dominance and the same prowess in front of goal. So, yeah, it's there with a hint of optimism and hope, but I do think that bad luck has to catch up with the team at some point. And I'm not putting all of their greatness down to luck in the last couple of seasons, but if they get two key injuries up top, I think that people like Tottenham, for example, who have got now depth in that area, will look at them and think, we're coming for you.
If any Reds who are watching this at the end of the season want to clip that bit up when you've won the title, it was 55 minutes exactly you started speaking there.
As soon as I stop speaking, I want Van Dijk lifting the trophy on my head.
Les, I mean, can you top that on Liverpool going down?
Basically, yeah, they were in my bottom three, really. I thought I'd written down less than what I wrote Liverpool. I've got an Everton one. It's a night follows day, this one, but we will be on the end of another wacky one-off decision that no one else falls victim to. So I'm thinking, you know, doing this VAR conversation after the game.
Yes.
We'll be the first team to have results overturned on the back of a conversation after the game.
Or, okay, so I think something will be misheard in the audio.
Yeah.
And like, the VAR will say that's definitely a penalty, and the referee will hear it as definitely not, and game will carry on.
Or the full time whistle will go, there'll be a VAR decision before, and then the game will restart to give the team a penalty against us.
That's happened at half time in the Bundesliga, hasn't it, where they had to kind of drag the players back on.
That'll be us. We'll be like, Lampard will be giving the big one fist pumps in front of the
There'll be fans on the pitch.
And then, yeah, everyone we'll, have to clear
we'll get a punch deduction for that as well.
Yeah, okay, that's a good
100%.
Shot.
100%. So that's what I'm going for with Abbott. with the Premier League in general, this links into something we said before. Scott Park will wear even worse clothing than he did when he was at Fulham. Which could involve really 7 G-lays. It could. It's going to have multiple layers and it's going to be horrific.
God. I'm excited for yours, come on.
My non-Everton one is that Newcastle are going to be a bit crap. And Eddie Howe will get binned, and Brendan Rodgers will be their manager by the end of the season.
It's a shout.
I can see that.
Yeah, that's a shout.
My Everton one is a bit mad, but I'm gonna go with it because I've been thinking about it today. I think Jordan Pickford's going to score a goal this season.
Oh my God!
And I don't think it's going to be coming up for like a header or necessarily a Tim Howard one. I could see him coming up late on, ball dropping to him on his left foot, and he just lashes it in. Like a little scrappy finish, like Chloe Kelly the other day.
That'd be the greatest thing ever.
I can see him just getting in there, left foot, lashing it in.
Given the influence that I've seen members of the Blue Room have on Everton's pre-season social media content, I hope that someone out there is listening to this and allows Jordan Pickford a 38th game penalty, because you know he would absolutely
lash it
away.
Maybe just get him on them anyway.
Stick him on pens.
I don't, you know, we're all harping back to what was it?
What are you taking a penalty?
Euros?
If we get a penalty on Richardson, Saturday, you're taking on
Gordon?
It's happening on Saturday. Pickford's going to take it.
Winner, get in.
in terms of capability of striking a football, he is the one, isn't he?
Gordon or Gray, maybe.
It's great play.
It's a good penalty, don't he?
JP won. He'll be our top scorer and might score a goal.
Yeah. Purely because he's just channeling his inner Dennis Irwin.
Can we go back to that question? Who didn't score 10 last season but will next season?
Jordan Pickford, yeah. All penalties and one late equaliser.
All jokes aside, if he wanted someone to hit the back of the net, he'd probably be the one, wouldn't he?
I'll put money on
him. He would probably be the one.
Not a bad shout, is it?
No.
It is bad, yeah.
What do you think? Do you think Jordan Pickford's going to score a goal this season? Are Liverpool going to tank it?
Do you remember that Tim Howard one? Oh my God, that was... Did anyone go to that game?
I didn't go.
It was... I mean, I've seen some shite at Goodison Park. It's definitely in the top 10 worst Everton performances I've ever seen. Yeah. Who was in goal?
Bogdan.
The ginger lad, that's right. He was in goal.
He used to play for Liverpool.
David Ingo.
Gary Cahill scored, didn't he?
Yeah, it was so bad. And you know, the celebration, it wasn't even muted that you sometimes get with a goalkeeper scoring, because the utter relief that we were actually able to do something productive going forward. Johnny Eisinger nearly killed Tim Howard because he thought, you know what, there was no other way that this was happening. Like, is it Strakwalesi who runs at Bogdan in order to try and get on the end of the ball? But it was a terrible, terrible night. But yeah, Begovic also scored a goal, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a very similar sort of goal, wasn't it? It was a big goof in the wind quarter.
Very much the type of goalkeeper that we go for these days. But you know, if Pickford scores a goal, we're just gonna have to fold the pod, because I couldn't have this.
I could see him either taking a penalty or lashing one in.
I'd love to see him hit a free kick on behind the scenes. I'd love to see it.
Not in a game.
Have you seen that Hulk free kick this week that he just lashed into the post and it looked like the goal was going to fall down? Jeez. I reckon he'd be that style of Adriano free kick taker.
In all seriousness, if we get a penalty on Saturday, where is he on your list of takers?
Say we start Ali McNeil Gordon. Gordon. Pickford.
I'll probably go Gordon, Ali, McNeil. I'll probably put him fourth.
McNeil, fair play, yeah. Having seen him kick a ball twice, I would say Dwight McNeil is up there, yeah. But no, you know, he's in the top half.
Yeah. One for me, go for it.
Oh, yes, get him.
He definitely hooks it to the keeper's left every time as well.
Took that great one for England, didn't he? He was going to take the sixth, wasn't he, in the Euros as well?
He should have took the fifth.
I trust him. The good thing about the power he puts on the ball is that I don't think it comes back into play. he either scores or...
Oh, imagine it hit the post.
And then it's back down the other end. Yeah. And you see this, don't you? Like, Shilover was the classic, wasn't he, in terms of how many career goals did he get in his 30s?
I love that we're actually talking about this seriously.
His was in his 30s, but there was never that. Okay, I'm going to come back to this. There was never that moment of pandemonium where it hit the bar.
It would have been if he played for us.
Yeah. The one thing I was going to say is that, to go back to Everton predictions, Jordan Pickford hits the bar with a penalty, and all 21 other players start scrambling endlessly.
You know what the other goalie would get it in the hands and kick out the other end and score. The other goalie would score.
Oh no. Why did we say it? Everton will concede a goal from a Jordan Pickford penalty. There you go.
Let us know your thoughts on that. I'll quickly read out some of the ones that people have said about Everton.
What did we say?
It's happening. Just embrace it. Just embrace it now. Matt Barry says Frank Lampard's going to win manager of the season.
At Everton, no.
What would he have to do? Win a domestic Europe, cup and finish top 7.
Europe, I think Europe probably gets him in.
Yeah.
Steve Sheehan said, not necessarily an Everton prediction, but Ramsdale will make a save in the first game of the season, and all pundits will want him as England number one or a Pickford until Jordan scores that penalty, and then he'll be straight
in.
Martin Wyatt thinks we're going to win the FA Cup. Joe says, I'm optimistic we'll scrape qualification for the Europa Conference League and take 8,000 fans to the qualifier in the Faroe Islands, where we'll get B5-0.
I think I'd take that over the FA Cup win.
Yeah,
marginally.
Yeah, I think I would actually.
Josh Harland said a player making the debut will score the winner against Liverpool in the Goodison Derby. That's the first game after the transfer window. And Mike Blakey, Lampard will be gone in November to Bournemouth. Alex says the Black Cat of Goodison will return.
Against Wolves, that was, wasn't
excited.
It?
Excited.
Yeah, they're down.
Joel Tomo says Mina will play 3 games in a row without getting injured. And I loved it. I love this one from Keith Davis, who says, the scallop pies will be burnt, the foot-long buns will be a rock, and I'll miss a goal needing a piss.
Yeah, if Bramley Moore could sort anything, it should be the sausage-to-bun ratio. Everyone loves that initial trimming of the sausage, of the bun.
There's your title, trimming of the sausage.
But...
quite like cryogenic Liz Truss body before or whatever it was.
Get all of your meat goods inside the bun. That's all I ever need to learn from this season.
Sage advice from Mark Mersey there to finish off. We've gone well longer than an hour. Rob Veer will be very proud. You've done 2-hour-plus podcasts today.
I mean, no one tell anyone who granted me the annual leave today that this is how I spend it.
Wonderful stuff. Cheers to Moose, cheers to Les. Let us know your thoughts on all those things, like I said.
Hot dogs, mainly. We need to know your thoughts on hot dogs.
How'd you trim your sausage?
Are Liverpool going down? Is Jordan Pickford going to score? All those sorts of things. Give us a shout on that. Cheers for listening as well. I've got absolutely tons out at the moment. Kick about. We'll be up by the time you listen to this with Moes and Rob. Rob did an interview with Steve Cerruti in the week as well. Patreon weekend preview is up. Weekly edit with Paddy earlier today as well. There's just loads of stuff. Loads of stuff on at the moment. Of course, we'll be back after the game on Saturday. Mark Moses is not going to be in the instant match reaction. Les, are you going to be on it or have you got to go?
I'll probably have to go after the game.
Well, we'll get all the people in on that on Saturday. Very organised. But yeah, that'll be from the Denby Castle. Looking forward to that. But yeah, that's been your predictions / mailbag. Up the top of you, so speak to you very soon here on the Blue Room. Sports Social Podcast Network.